Hi there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the A Minute to Midnight show. My name's Tony and I'm coming to you from New Zealand. And with me today on the show, I have a regular guest from Georgia, USA. That's Leo Hyman. So welcome back, Leo. It's always good to catch up with you, and I find I always learn so much from your articles and things. So it's good to be back.
Good to be back on with you, Tony. Thank you.
And just quickly off air, we were saying it's feeling the last few days like the news is going round in a circle, or we're treading water a little bit with things. But certainly one thing that wasn't just treading water and has really ignited a bit of a firestorm was that posting of Donald Trump, where he posted himself a picture of him looking like Jesus or the Messiah, you know, figure healing somebody. And of course that's created outrage, people saying it's blasphemous. And I've had people new ages, or ex-new ages I should say, saying, looking at the symbolism and saying there's an awful lot in there as well, a sort of Luciferian type symbolism. So it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, Luciferian symbolism aside, I mean, and it's definitely there, I agree, you know, from the praying nurse as Donald Trump is standing over some gentleman who appears to be incapacitated, looking like he's healing him miraculously and wearing the red robe of purity that Jesus Christ is often depicted wearing, to the soldiers up over his head with a Baphomet demon in between the two soldiers. The original image was posted by some guy, Adam something, I don't remember his full name. And Trump apparently liked it and reposted it. But before he did, somebody at the White House reportedly added the Baphomet character up on top. So we know now for a fact that someone inside Trump's inner circle in the White House, you know, because he picks, I'm sure, what he wants to post on the internet, but it goes through some other folks at the White House. And we know now that somebody in there in his inner circle is under some sort of demonic influence, because why would they pick such a despicable Luciferian symbol as a Baphomet and add it to this image, this meme that Trump posts on a Sunday night, of all things? You know, and this comes 1 week after, this was the Orthodox Christian Easter, where he posted this despicable, blasphemous image. And 1 week before that, on the Western Church calendar of Easter Sunday, Resurrection Sunday, he posts that despicable tweet about how he wanted to, or he was threatening to, wipe out an entire civilization. You know, who says that at any point in time, let alone on Resurrection Sunday, when we're all supposed to be focused on the goodness of Christ and what he did for us and life. And here we have Trump focusing on death and Holocaust and atrocities of an entire civilization, the Iranian people, which is historically Persia, you know, and this is a country of 93 million people. This is no small deal. And he basically threatened a genocide in the wide open, saying that what he had in store for them, if they didn't sign his deal and open the effing strait, that it was going to be worse than anything they ever imagined. And it was going to wipe out their, not just their country, Iran, but their entire civilization. Those are some strong words. And whether or not he was serious or not is almost beside the point, in my opinion. Reputable world leaders simply do not talk that way. I can never remember one talking that way, good, bad, or indifferent, in my lifetime. And I'm certainly no spring chicken. So I've seen a lot of world leaders come and go, evil and good and somewhere in between. But I have never, ever heard language like that, that specific. You know, we hear the Iranians chant death to America and call America the great Satan and this, that, and the other. But I've never heard even them threaten to eliminate an entire civilization, a historic civilization or people group. So this is not to be taken lightly, in my opinion. And, you know, this recent thing, he tried to deny that he was depicting himself as Christ and said that, oh, no, when he was questioned about it, I that was me being depicted as a doctor, a medical doctor, because making people better, because I do make people better, he said. Did you happen to see that that clip?
I don't think
anybody's buying it. Do you?
Well, doctors wear lab coats. They don't wear white with a red sash on it, and they have light in their hands and you know, all of that. No, it's a messianic type of figure that he's presented himself as. And then he says, oh, something about the Red Cross. Well, I wonder whether he's talking about the Rosicrucians, actually.
Yeah. And I didn't see a Red Cross symbol anywhere in the image, did you?
No.
And the other thing, Tony, that makes this so concerning is it came a week and a half after he was basically anointed and blessed as a world conqueror by several pastors, including his own Paula White and Franklin Graham and Robert Jeffress. They all gathered in the White House on the Wednesday before Easter and prayed, laid hands on him and prayed that whatever he touched, he would be successful in. Mm. Whatever he set out to do, he would be successful in. That he would... And they were speaking in the context, obviously, of this war, which had just kicked off about a week or two before that. And so, you know, I'm just concerned that President Trump has let power go to his head and feels like he is somehow set apart by God to conquer this, that, or the other nation. Between him getting that blessing from some of the most prominent Protestant men of the cloth in America, such as Franklin Graham. And then I think he expected the same type of blessing to be given to his activities, his reckless warlike activities, by the Pope. And that's why he laid into the Pope on Sunday, called him weak on crime and a very liberal person, and he would not have even been elected Pope if it was not for him, Donald Trump. And, you know, oh, and by the way, Catholics love me, and so you should get on board with me and support my wars. That was the gist of his message to the Pope and the Vatican, you know, about a week or so after he was given the blessing by the top Protestant pastors that anything he touched would basically become a raving success. So I think we have an extreme narcissistic personality in the White House whose narcissism is being fed, unfortunately, by Christian leaders. And, you know, it's amazing to me, I don't know about you, Tony, but it's amazing to me that even after he posted that image of him appearing as Jesus Christ healing a sick man, that there were Christians online on social media defending him still. I mean, what on God's green earth is there to defend about that image? I will never understand it, but it does bear out that Donald Trump is more than just a president. He's more than just a political figure. We've seen so many of them come and go with varying degrees of followings, but I have never seen a politician with a cult following quite like Donald Trump. When you can basically go off the rails and post one of the most outrageous, blasphemous images online, and some Christians still feel the need. That's the concerning part to me. Just be quiet if you're unsure about it, or you didn't like it, or you do like it. You know, why did they feel the need to go public with supporting him and defending him in such an outrageous action? That I will never quite be able to wrap my head around.
Well, that's right. I've seen that too, and people on posting God bless Trump and all sorts of things like that, and then saying, oh, look, now all the oil tankers are coming to America instead of going through the Strait of Hormuz, and so it's building the American empire. And yeah, and just like there's all of this, and this is Christian and Christian groups and so on posting things like that. It's like, come on, people. To me, it's just like cognitive dissonance completely. And, you know, I think Trump has always been a narcissist. I believe he was groomed for this role because he's the perfect guy to fill the Luciferian agenda for a great reset. And no one else would have done it the way he's done it and is doing it. And so... to me, it's very concerning watching what's happening. And I know there are a lot of people on my channel and so forth that are saying, why don't you just come out and say that Donald Trump's the Antichrist? When are you going to come out and say that? Well, I'm not at that point in saying that he is. I mean, it possibly is, but and he fills a lot of the, ticks a lot of the boxes, but, you know, there's a lot he hasn't done yet. And there's a lot, you know, there's nothing to me that says definitively he is yet. And interestingly,
where I stand on that is he checks a lot of the boxes that would at least put him at the level of being a candidate for the Antichrist. I don't know that he is, but he has done very little, if anything, I could think of, since he's come to power, at least, that would completely dispel the idea that he is the Antichrist. So we have this figure out here with a lot of power doing some Antichrist-like things and actually, you know, going through a scenario that was, you know, where he was shot, apparently, and survived a potentially mortal head wound, which the Bible says it appears, it appeared that he had a mortal head wound. Mm. It doesn't say that he definitely did. And so he's been on my radar ever since that happened.
Yeah.
And that was in Butler, PA, what, in 2024?
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm not saying he is, but by the same token, he keeps doing things that would, okay, there he checked another box, right?
Yeah.
He made a treaty with Israel and Israel's enemies, a covenant called the Abraham Accords.
Yeah.
He has tried to affirm that treaty, and he, now in his second term in office, it has a boastful mouth. He now appears, and this is the most recent thing where you could have said, oh no, Trump doesn't have it. It can't be him because Trump is a man of peace. He started no new wars in his first term in office. Well, the Bible says that the Antichrist will be a conqueror going out to conquer. And that seems to be what Trump is entirely focused on his second term in office. It's almost like he's completely bored and could care less by anything that has to do with domestic affairs and improving the lot of average Americans in fixing America and all of the many problems that we have. He rarely even talks about it anymore. All he talks about is his dominance over other countries, his need to dominate other countries and steal their resource wealth. I mean, he said last week that, you know, if it was up to me, I would just steal the oil. He said the oil, Iran's oil is there for the taking. And if it was up to me, I would just take it. I would keep it and we would make a lot of money. quote unquote. Those are his exact words. Yeah. I don't even believe that's a paraphrase. Yeah. I think I got it pretty close to his exact words. And so the Bible says that the Antichrist will destroy many through peace and prosperity and the craft of his hand. And so, again, he just continues to do things that make me watch him more closely. I'm like you. I'm still not at the point where we can say this is the man. I do not believe we're there yet. But yeah. By golly, he seems to be almost applying for the job willingly. You know, he's like, yeah. Look at me. I want to be that man.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that would require not just demonic possession, but Satan himself to enter the soul of the man and take over his spirit. I don't know that we're to that point yet. He does seem to be under some sort of demonic influence, but, you know, I don't see yet where he is possessed by Satan himself. And so I've not ruled it out, but I've not said that this is the man either. But I think we're safe in assuming that at the very least, Tony, Donald Trump is some type of forerunner or archetype of a future Antichrist. I think we're safe in saying that much because he just checks too many of the boxes. He does too many things that normal leaders don't even think about doing or saying with that boastful mouth of his. And it's really sad that America has been saddled with a leader like this at a time when we really, really do need to fix so many problems, so many horrible, serious problems in our own country. We've got people who cannot afford health insurance. I mean, and I'm not talking about homeless people or minimum wage workers. I'm talking about middle-class people who are having to go without health insurance because it's simply out of their league, out of their ability to afford. And even if you can afford it, it provides so little coverage that it's really not worth it, is what a lot of people are finding out. And we've got veterans who are living under bridges. We've got vaccine injured people by the millions, and Trump still talks about his Operation Warp Speed as if it's this great, magnificent accomplishment. And I do think it's also worth making the point that there are some parallels between Donald Trump 1.0 administration and Donald Trump 2.0 administration, which we're living through now. If you look at his first term, he presided over this big, huge crisis in which he felt compelled to shut down the global economy. We literally had economic lockdowns in country after country after country that took the lead of the Americans and the Europeans and the Western world. He presided over that. If he had taken a different approach to COVID, I can pretty much guarantee you that many other countries wouldn't have went as far with the lockdowns as they did either. But Trump listened to Fauci, listened to these people whispering in his ear, telling him to take these drastic measures. Oh, COVID is unlike anything in your lifetime, President Trump. You need to do this, this, and that. Make people wear masks, shut down the economy, tell the businesses to all close. And so that was a big, huge factor undermining his first term as president. Even though he rode into office, right, as this businessman who was promising to vastly, exponentially improve the economy and make everyone prosperous, that was what made him so popular. We thought we were getting, you know, something different in that way from your typical politician. And it did even start out that way. His first couple of years in office, the economy did improve, but then boom, he shut it down. He launched Operation Warp Speed. There was all of these supply chain disruptions, and you couldn't find certain things like toilet paper and paper towels and ammunition. It was all gone off the shelves. you know, eggs disappeared. You know, it was brutal, pretty brutal. Well, now in his second term, it's a totally different scenario, right? But it's the exact same result. Global shutdown of the economy. This time, it's a big world, what looks is shaping up to be World War III that he has initiated. I mean, make no mistake about it. Donald Trump initiated this war against Iran, which led to the closing of the Strait of Hormuz. And then the Houthis are getting involved, and they have the potential to shut down the Red Sea corridor. And if this goes on much longer, I think you could see China or some other countries go get involved and maybe shut. They'll say, oh, if you want to shut that critical waterway, we'll shut down this waterway over here. Mm. You know, maybe the Suez Canal is next with, you know, the one that flows through Egypt and is very critical. You don't know what's coming next, but it doesn't look good for the global economy. We already have countries that are rationing fuel, rationing energy. You know, they have gas lines. It hasn't hit us that way here yet. But if this continues, Tony, I am fully expecting. And by the way, I read an article today at oilprice.com, which is a good website for anyone wanting to keep up with the not just the price of oil, but what's influencing the price of oil. They have an article out today saying, you know, this $96, $97 a barrel that we're sitting at today, that is not reflective. That is not properly reflecting the shortage of oil that is on the world market right now. We are down like 13 million barrels a day, I believe it said. And the market will eventually catch up with that reality. And prices are going to spike back up to at least as high as they were a couple of weeks ago, which is, I think, like $112, $115 a barrel. And they could go much higher, in which case, we're going to see gas prices, which have already increased by about a dollar since this war started. We're going to see them go up another dollar, another $2. We could see $7, $8 a gallon gas here in the United States by this summer in the middle of what is normally a busy travel season. And that would really shut people down, I think. I mean, right now they're hurting, but it's not to the point where, okay, I need to park my car and I can't drive it. If we hit, you know, anywhere near $8 a gallon for a gallon of gasoline in this country, I can tell you that's going to cause major upheavals. And then it's going to be affecting diesel prices, which now that affects food prices. Food prices are going to go up exponentially if this doesn't end soon. And by fall and winter of next year, I predict we're going to start seeing famine. Not just high prices, but starvation in many countries. And who knows at what point that hits even Western countries.
Well, the thing is the fertilizers going through the Strait of Hormuz, that's been stopped, and it's too late for next year's crop. So
even if this war ends tomorrow, you're right, the crisis with the fertilizers, I saw something today that like 70% of farmers right now, we're in the spring planting season right now. And approximately 70% of farmers are not getting the fertilizers that they need to plant their crops and get the type of yield that they would normally expect.
Yeah, so that's going to flow on. Obviously, you know, you don't see that now, but you in a few months' time, when the, if the crop yields are down, that's going to make a difference. And, you know, that's... Well, that's how famine start, isn't it, is with crops not maturing properly and being less of them and having to be rationed out and so on. And, you know, with
famines typically start from corrupt political leadership, yes.
Mm. So it's interesting too, like I noticed that the people are saying, get in there and finish the job, you know, finish off Iran, and we want to free all our brothers and sisters in Iran and so on from this terrible regime, which it is a terrible regime. Let's not be, you know, muck around. Under the Ayatollahs, it's horrible. Who would want to live there? But then some people do. It's a divided country, and yep, the Iranians, some of them definitely want out, but how many of the percentage, I don't know. you know, and what would replace it and so on. But the other thing about it is, can you even trust them? Because that leadership, when they're going to the negotiating table and so on, and we know that they're looking for their Mahdi. So,
well, I mean, let me flip it around. How would they ever be able to trust the United States in any negotiating situation? I mean, two times on two different occasions when they were at the negotiating table and getting close to what they thought was a breakthrough, and Donald Trump was making comments about, and Steve Witkoff was going on CNN making comments, we've made tremendous progress. They get the United States and or Israel goes in and assassinates their leaders.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't tell which one is more likely to double cross the other at this point. There's no trust on either side. And that's why I have been reporting for months now that this war is not going to be, first of all, I said it was not going to be quick and easy, like Donald Trump said.
Yeah,
I've already been proven correct on that score. And I've also been predicting that it would continue on longer and longer and longer, and that anything we hear about peace talks or peace negotiations is nothing but the outer trappings of a vast propaganda network trying to get people to think that the United States of America is even interested in peace. And at this point, the Iranians are certainly not interested in peace, because they have been able to hold on and disrupt the entire world economy by continuing the war. And so when neither party, in order to have it's really common sense, folks. I mean, in order to have a peace deal, you've number one got to have professional diplomats, which the United States sends to New York real estate developers who are agents of Israel to do the negotiating. So, you know, zero trust in someone like that. We don't send professional diplomats. That's how we know the Trump administration is not serious about coming up with a diplomatic solution to end this war. And, you know, when do you ever go and assassinate the members of the opposing diplomatic team and then pretend to come back and want another round of talks? I mean, it's just insane. And so I have been predicting and telling people, get ready for a long war and prepare for it to seriously affect the supply chains in America, in Europe, energy, food, and everything that's transported by diesel trucks. So this is nowhere near over. This is nowhere near over. And you've got Trump, you know, complaining about the Iranians closing the Strait of Hormuz. Well, they warned you, Donald, before you invaded their country, that that's what they would do. And I don't care how evil the regime is. I don't care who likes it or doesn't like it. It is a sovereign country. And they were attacked. And so the natural inclination of any serious country that considers itself sovereign is to defend itself. And if you don't have the military to go against the humongous power of the United States, you're going to conduct asymmetrical warfare. But the remarkable thing about it is they warned us beforehand that that's how they were going to conduct the war if they were attacked. They said they would close the Strait of Hormuz. They warned that this would affect the price of oil and collapse the entire global economy. What does Donald Trump do? He does it anyway. He believes Bibi Netanyahu, his buddy in Israel, who told him, Donald, we can conduct this war quick and easy. Maybe a little similar to what you did in Venezuela. Trump's own cabinet members, I'm now learning, New York Times and others have reported, Trump's own cabinet members, even pro-Israel members of the cabinet, like Marco Rubio, John Ratcliffe, the head of the CIA, they warned him. These are two of the most pro-Israel people you can imagine, by the way, John Ratcliffe and Marco Rubio. They warned Trump after the meeting with Bibi after his meeting on February 11th with Bibi Netanyahu, in which Bibi went into the Situation Room of the White House, which is bizarre, sat at the head of the table. Donald Trump did not. Bibi did, and gave a 2 or 3 hour long presentation of why Iran was weak, Iran was vulnerable. If we now is the window of opportunity to attack them and change out this regime, we can do it, and we can do it quickly. Trump's own cabinet members, after Netanyahu was done, told him, we disagree with that assessment. Oh, and even Daniel Raisin Kane, the joint chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also advised Trump, don't listen to Netanyahu. And Kane is also a very neoconish, war hawkish type military general. Even he warned Trump, not going to be as easy as Netanyahu told you, Donald. But what did Trump do? He went with the advice of Netanyahu. It all blew up in his face. Iran did exactly what they said they would do if attacked. They shut down the Strait of Hormuz. And now suddenly the whole war is about reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Well, guess what? It was open before the war started. I mean, this is nonsensical, the rhetoric coming out of the White House. You know, bad Iran for closing the Strait. Reopen the Strait, the effing Strait, Trump said on Christmas Eve. Yeah. Reopen the effing Strait now. Oh, and then he says the Strait is virtually open. And then he says, oh, we don't need the Strait. It's not important to us. Europe, NATO, you can go reopen it. Now he says, Iran is defeated, but they're still blocking the Strait. Well, guess what? Now we're gonna go block the Strait. And so this is completely schizophrenic, because what did he do? He lifted the sanctions when it became clear that Iran closed the Strait and had the power to keep the Strait closed. What did Trump do? He lifted the sanctions on Iranian oil and Russian oil in order to keep the global price of oil down. Because the last thing he wants is $125 a barrel oil and $5, $6, $7 a gallon gas leading up to the midterm elections in November. So he does this incredible thing of lifting his own sanctions on Russia and Iran so that they can start pumping and sending out more oil through this strait that Iran now controls. But now he comes yesterday or Sunday and says, you know what? We're going to blockade the strait. And so if that is serious and he's actually going to attack tankers coming through the strait, then we are going to see a massive escalation in oil and energy prices. I'm not sure that he's going to follow through on that. In fact, there was news today that a Chinese tanker made it through and the U.S. Navy did not fire on it. So it's going to be real interesting to see what happens in the days ahead. And that is the key thing here to watch, too, is what is China? China is, if Trump follows through with all of his threats, China is going to be the big loser, okay? They're going to be cut off from shipping routes, key shipping routes, and to get access to those routes, they will have to deal with Donald Trump on his terms. I don't see China doing that, do you?
No, they won't. I'm sure they won't. They'll definitely have to react. And, of course, there's no way the U.S. was going to fire on a Chinese tanker. I mean, you'd kick off World War III straight away.
Yeah, but maybe that's what Trump wants at some point. I don't know. You know, it's almost like he goes right up to the edge of what can I do before launching, how much can I do? How much can I rub salt in the eye of these different countries without actually kicking off full-blown World War II? I mean World War III.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe we're already in World War III, but it hasn't come to the point where our country, where we're actually experiencing attacks on U.S. soil. But it seems like Trump goes right up to the edge of what he thinks he can get away with without missiles coming flying in towards New York City and Washington, D.C. I mean, we really are dealing with a guy who doesn't seem to have control over his own faculties at this point.
It's interesting, too. He's going hell for leather to isolate himself from Europe, too, in many ways, and lambasting different countries' leaders, you know, like, well, he's gone after a number of them now. And so America's kind of isolating themselves, or you're isolating yourself in a sense this from the traditional allies that you have.
Yeah, I think they're afraid of him, so they're not going to speak out against what he's doing. But I guarantee you that if we had a 25th Amendment invoked and Donald Trump was somehow removed, you would have a lot of happy campers in European capitals. I have no doubt about that. And we saw Viktor Orban lost his re-election in Hungary. He was a big ally of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be interesting what takes place there. You know, Hungary was like the last bastion in the EU against some of the more outrageous anti-Russian policies that were coming out of other European capitals. And so now he's been removed. So the gloves, I think, are going to come off even more in that war between Ukraine and Russia. And by the way, that's another thing we need to note. Even though the sanctions were lifted on Russian oil, Ukraine has continued to hit Russian oil refineries, Russian oil terminals on the Black Sea. And Russia, 40% of Russia's oil exporting capability has been taken off the market in just the last couple of weeks due to Ukrainian drone attacks on their oil facilities. So, you know, again, you just can't believe much of what you hear coming from the mouth of Donald Trump. Oh, we want Russian oil to get on the market to keep prices down. Well, apparently you only want 60% of it because you just allowed Ukraine to eliminate the other 40%.
Well, is Trump want the Venezuelan oil and for America to control the oil that way? Is that a part of his plan?
That's another incongruent statement, you know, that really doesn't add up to the facts. Oil companies, global oil companies based in the West have gone in there and they really don't even feel like it's worth what it would take to get their oil output up to par because it's a very bad quality of oil that comes out of the ground in Venezuela. It's a very harsh, thick, globby mess that has to be mixed with light sweet crude in order to thin it out, basically, and make it useful for the global market. So it costs a lot to get it out of the ground. It costs a lot to process it, and the big oil companies really aren't even interested in undertaking the expense of getting that oil to its full potential.
Yeah, it's interesting. By the way, just changing subject quickly, another one of those Antichrist candidates years ago I had a couple of times on the show a guy called Tim Cohen, and he was adamant that King Charles or then Prince Charles is the Antichrist. Well, isn't it really interesting that King Charles is supposedly the de facto head of the Church of England, and at Easter he didn't even give an Easter speech, you know, for Christians, but he's given Ramadan speeches for the Muslims, and he's supposed to be the defender of the faith. Well, defender of the faiths, he says now.
Yeah.
It's real interesting just seeing what's happening there.
Yeah, I mean, Charles seems to have taken a very low profile in recent years. He is really the father of the, if you trace it back, he's kind of the father of the Agenda 2020, Agenda 2021, Agenda 2030, and all the sustainable development practices that go back to the early 90s. And so he did kind of fit the bill for a while of someone who could be on the radar of folks like us. And, you know, you think about some of the horrendous festivals that he has reigned over. There was the Commonwealth Games. Remember those a couple of years ago? Probably 4 or 5 years ago now. Time gets away from me. But they had the International Commonwealth Games in the UK, and they literally had a Baphomet and a golden calf that was being worshipped by the ceremonially worshipped by these half-clad women.
Yeah.
And it was really, really decadent and pagan. And everyone said, oh, wow, look at that. He might be the Antichrist. but since then, and he's also, by the way, very few people know this, but he is a licensed, registered magician. He is a professional magician trained by some of the best in the world. And that was also something that kind of fits the mold of an Antichrist figure. And I do think he's an Antichrist figure. It's just he's not the Antichrist, in my opinion.
Yeah. He, of course, he was a big backer of the Great Reset originally, too, on the videos.
Yeah, absolutely. So, because that fit, I mean, the Great Reset is really nothing but Agenda 2030 on steroids. And he was, you know, he was one of the early backers of that. So it made perfect sense that he would be out there promoting the rebranded Agenda 2030, which was the Great Reset. And, you know, the 15-minute cities, the whole nine yards, the 24/7 control, the crackdown on freedom of speech. You look at his country is one of the leaders in the West of cracking down on free speech, right?
Yeah.
You know, people have been thrown in jail for putting their opinions on Facebook.
Yeah, and you've got the rise of Islamic politicians and so on in the UK, and you start, well, is King Charles a Muslim? You know, that's the, well, he's probably like all those global Luciferian elites. They are what they're everything, you know, the head of the church, the head of the, you know, they're probably in a coven somewhere, and you know, all
and
of
they're
that.
Also into the Kabbalah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like Jared Kushner is in the Trump administration.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other subject, really. That's right. Jared Kushner is part of that, the Lubavitchers, and we know that they're very Kabbalah, and that's nothing to do with the, what that we call the Torah. It's all the Talmud and that right. Jewish mysticism, which is. Oh, that, like I said, we're probably too far into this show now to get into that. But you're right; that's a big part of it, and that Kabbalah is definitely a big, I believe, a big player behind the scenes, along with the Jesuits and, you know, the Freemasons. It's kind of this conglomeration of secret society types, I think, that control the world, and these people are just kind of like Donald Trump. Even it's just fulfilling, I believe, the agenda of these people, Illuminati, Illuminists, whatever you want to call them. And
100%. I mean, his biggest backer, one of his biggest backers, is Peter Thiel.
Yeah.
Well, Peter Thiel is on the steering committee of the Bilderbergs.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, was meeting this week. In, I believe, Washington, D.C., for their big annual meeting where they're going to talk about AI and wars and Iran and energy and all of the big issues that we're facing. They're going to be discussing and coming down with how to deal with at the secret Bilderberg meeting, you know, where Peter Thiel and Alex Karp are big time members. And so these are the two top executives at Palantir, which is a company that you're, you know, a data gathering and data analysis company that your viewers are probably pretty familiar with, you know, where they have myriad government contractors, government contracts now across almost all federal agencies to gather data on every American citizen, to analyze that data, create a dossier on every American and determine which ones might be too anti-government or need to be watched or need to be put on a target list. Yeah, very dangerous company. And the two top officials are like this with the Trump administration.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Peter Thiel, he was one of those people that was able to fast track a New Zealand citizenship too. So he's can run here to New Zealand if he wants. He's one of those elites that has property and things here as well. But Palantir, obviously, that's big in the whole war that you were talking about as well with the analysis and all of that.
They create kill lists. They create the kill chain, what they call a kill chain for governments, most notably the United States, Ukraine, and Israel in their various wars. The kill chain is created by this company, Palantir, which has admittedly a 10% failure rate in the list of targets that they give to these militaries and say, oh, kill this person and this person and this person. They admit, this is just what they admit to. Some people say it's much higher to a 10% error rate. And so, in other words, they're killing 90% in their own, this is according to their own information, 90% of the people they tell these foreign militaries and American militaries to kill are bad guys, but 10% of them are just innocent civilians that should never be harmed, let alone killed. And this is the type of entity that our government is doing business with.
And it's interesting too, because Peter Thiel, we started off talking about the Antichrist. Well, he's another one that's, he's talking constantly about the Antichrist. He almost obsessed with the Antichrist.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. It's very strange. Very strange.
Yep. So, all right. Well, I guess we better look to wrap up, but maybe can you once again tell our listeners where they find you online? And if you've got any last thoughts you'd like to get across, you're welcome to do so.
Well, like I always finish a lot, not always, but many of my articles I finish with the, as people know, the admonition, pray for peace, but prepare for war. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is not physical, like, okay, get this, that, and the other, and you'll be good for in case World War III breaks out in America. Most of it, the way I see it, when I say prepare for war, prepare yourself mentally and spiritually. Because in times of hardship and desperation, you know, do you know that your faith is strong enough to withstand something like that? We're not used to those type of circumstances here in America and in many other countries of the Western world. It's been many, many, many decades since World War II, and even that didn't really affect life in America other than, you know, some rationing of certain things. We didn't have bombs falling on us and everything like in Europe. And so, but think of the mental, how that would wear on you night after night, like what's going on in Israel right now and in Iran, night after night of bombs falling on you. That could make you insane and snap if you're not mentally strong and spiritually in tune with your Maker and with Jesus Christ, the Son of God. That's really the thing we need to work on, I think. If this war continues to escalate, we could find ourselves in some very difficult situations that maybe we hadn't even thought of.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, New Zealand, we never had bombs raining down here either. We've been so far away from it. I mean, I think we had a Japanese submarine in the water around New Zealand. That's about as close as we got to it in World War II as well. So, Leo, where do people find you online?
My Substack is leohoman.substack.com. You can get a free subscription. I don't put everything behind a paywall like some people do because I want it to be easily accessed by as many as possible. But I do need, you know, people to subscribe with paid subscriptions, a certain number to keep me myself going. And so if you want to support my work, that's the way to do it. Just take out a monthly or annual subscription.
Yeah, that's great. And I definitely recommend that people do that and support you as much as they possibly can. So thank you anyway for being with me again today. It's been another great discussion, and it will be interesting to see what people have to say in the comments. Please make sure you like the video and subscribe to us as well, and share it and make comments. You know, just keep the comments civil, but it'd be interesting to hear what people have to say. So yeah, thank you.
Always is.
It is, yeah, for sure. Thanks, Leo.
Thank you, Tony. My pleasure.
Cheers. Folks, please make sure you subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com as well by going down the right-hand side where it says enter your email to subscribe to blog. And we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. Don't sell anything. Don't do any advertising. If you want to support us, it's always much appreciated. And you can do that at aminutetomidnight.com. We have a donation page there if you want to help us out. And the music used, I've written, played and recorded. So God bless, and God willing, we'll be back with another episode in a few days' time.